This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Now available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, gonna try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things formerly Pac-12 football. We've been doing our kind of deep dive team by team. We were starting in the future Big 12 schools. We had to take a little pause because UCLA had some disruptions going on, and we're back, and we're going to talk about the Utah Utes. They could go into the Big 12 and just dominate. Steve Bartle from UteZone.com is joining us live here on the program. Steve, thanks for coming in, man.
Yeah, no problem. It's my wedding anniversary today, and there's nowhere else I'd rather be than right here with you two.
You're not saying that loud.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Please don't say that loud in your own house, unless she's not there.
Yeah. No, she knows. She's in on the bit. She knew.
That's awesome. Well, we're really going to talk some Utah Utes football, and we are live on our YouTube channel. So if you're watching, you can put a question, comment, or whatever in there, and we will try to convey whatever you want to say to Steve. We'll put it in there too. If you just put question in the front, if you have a funny comment, I will try to put that up on the screen. You can also, if you're listening on the podcast version of this, you can leave us a 5-star review, rate us wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate that very much. You can email us, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. I think we only got one email this week, so get on that, people. And you can leave us a voicemail or send us a text, 424-532-0678. Our resident voicemail stalker, Perk, is going to leave us another voicemail, so we'll play that one a little bit later on. But Steve, thanks again for coming in. I really want to dive deep into what's going on with the Utah Utes. I guess we should start with the man who's coming back. He's in Jake Browning territory now.
He's beyond Jake Browning
territory. Is he beyond Jake Browning territory?
This is far beyond Jake Browning.
I want to know for Big 12 Media Day if Cam Rising and Brent Keefe will both be there representing Utah, because they were there last year and neither of them played a down for the Utes. So it would be great to have them repeat. But we got those two guys coming. We got to start with Cam. Cam Rising, yeah. Steve. He's back.
Again, he is back.
Two more years of eligibility. Is that 2 years of eligibility left? Is that correct? Or I'm not
22. That's 22 more years of eligibility. That's what that is. Yeah, man, he's back. He's going to run it back. And, you know, it's interesting with Cam and Brent. We were joking around this past season of whether Brent and Cam were going to walk again. They've already walked as seniors on senior day twice. And now they'll have an opportunity to make it four times, you know, in the Big 12. So pretty unique situation for those two to have the opportunity to walk in on senior day. Is they've been around for a long time. But with that time, man, these guys are leaders. They're veterans. They've seen it all. There's not much they haven't seen at this point. And so, you know, Utah's riding high with those two coming back. And as they make that transition to the Big 12, there's a lot of confidence with those two coming back and just that veteran presence that they provide on the field.
Yeah. Cam Rising is going to be 25 this year. He turns 25 in May. And that's not a rarity for like players on Utah or in Utah schools, but usually there's a big gap in there where they've gone to Belize or something.
Right.
He's just straight from high school into college, and now he's entering his seventh year as a 25-year-old. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, no, I think. Oh, sorry. I think. You know, Cam McCormick has, you know, set the precedence. He's out there setting the pace for everybody to follow.
What's he on, nine or 10?
I think Cam McCormick is on year 9. You know, he's just collecting these NIL checks now. Cam, you know, he's following. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, like it's been quite the journey for Cam, you know, in particular. He was a 2018 recruit, goes to Texas, red shirts. Transfers, has to sit out the year, COVID, couple injuries, season-ending injuries, and now he's here for his seventh year. And Brant too, I think Brant is a seventh year too, I think.
Yeah. He'll be 25 in December.
It's just crazy. You know, 25, that's nothing, you know, in the state of Utah. That's a freshman at BYU. You know, so it's nothing new here in Utah. A 25-year-old starter.
With Cam, so this was interesting to me last year because it felt like there was a lot of mixed messaging and a lot of, like, I don't know, cross signals between the coaching staff, Cam Rising, his doctors, the whole thing. And I don't know if I was reading it wrong, but it felt like there was some real tension there. Like, it felt like he felt pressed upon to try to come back earlier than his doctors were telling him. Kyle Whittingham clearly felt like he'd been sold a bill of goods at some point, or at least that was the indications he was giving publicly. How much of that was real? How much was there actual tension here? Was there ever a threat that Cam Rising might not come back to Utah? Just kind of give us like kind of the inside peek at what was going on here.
Yeah, this was quite the year, quite the season. It was very unique. And, you know, that tension, you know, it was really real. You could feel it at, you know, for a couple of weeks, you know, as we got to conference play, you know, there was some real tension that you could feel, you know, even just being at practice with our 15-minute media availabilities. You know, you don't get a lot of time with these guys, but even in that short amount of time, you know, you could feel that there was some real frustration. Just with how the situation played out, you know, it does feel like Kyle felt, you know, maybe there was, you know, miscommunication in terms of the expected recovery and all of that. But there was definitely some tension. And I think ultimately, you know, both parties were able to kind of clear the air and get on the same page. You know, it required Cam, you know, essentially, you know, providing a tell-all article in The Athletic, you know, which was written by Chris Cameron. It was a great piece, and it really highlighted just how bad the injury was that Cam suffered in the Rose Bowl. He completely blew out his knee, and, you know, the fact that he was even back practicing, you know, in a limited fashion, you know, at that point, but the fact that he was back was, for him, it was a big deal. Whereas the expectations all year long and all summer and coming into the season were that, you know, he was going to be, you know, a little bit further ahead in his recovery. You know, I talked to people over the summer that cited, you know, advancements in recovery and in surgeries and all these sort of things. And You know, it felt like there was just a, I don't know how this happens, but there was just a miscommunication, a misunderstanding of the recovery timeline. And it just led to frustration by both parties. But I don't think that it was ever to the point where Cam felt he needed to move on, needed to go somewhere else, or that Utah was interested in going, you know, elsewhere. It was just frustration because, you know, Utah wanted to, they felt they had a good team. They were competitive, and they had a chance to go three straight in the Pac-12. It would have been a pretty daunting task, but they felt they had a pretty good team. And it just, you know, in the season, you're in the midst of it, you know, and there's just frustrations. It got a little overboard, I think. And I shouldn't say overboard, but just, you know, the frustrations built up and ultimately boiled over, you know, midway through the season. But ultimately, again, I think cleared the air and, you know, everybody's back on the same page and with same goal in mind moving into 2024.
The injury situation, it wasn't just, you know, you kind of have those star players that were out for the season. It just seemed like a mass unit throughout the entire year. And you got to, you know, kudos to Kyle Whittingham, who's been doing this a long time. You're just like, oh, we're going to have this safety play, running back, whatever it was. You're just kind of pulling people from everywhere, and just it just seemed kind of crazy the what they were able to kind of put together. Like, what I mean is, are all those guys kind of healthy now, or what was, you know, maybe kind of give your assessment of what the injury situation was like all season?
The injury situation was unlike anything I've seen in my time doing this. I think, you know, I started, once we got to week four, I felt it was necessary to like tally how many games were missed by guys in the two deep. And I continued to just keep track of that number. And by the end, you know, there, it was up there towards, I don't remember the exact number right now, but it was up towards 150 games lost to injury from guys, you know, in the starting unit and in the two deep. So it was, you know, it was unreal. You know, it seemed like every week there was a new injury that, you know, was pretty significant. Right, you can go through the weeks, and essentially there was one every week, it felt like, for the first half of the season. And ultimately, I think Lander Barton was the last big injury that happened in during the season against USC. But man, it was pretty wild there. You know, Utah was having to rely on some guys that they didn't necessarily want to. You know, a lot of these younger guys were redshirt guys that were forced into action. You know, put some freshmen into situations where they needed to be counted on when maybe they weren't necessarily ready to be counted on. But now, you know, everybody's, I'm pretty sure everybody's back, you know, in good health, or nearing it, getting close to it. I don't think Utah suffered any, you know, significant injuries that will go into, that will extend into next season. I'd have to double check on that, but for the most part, I think, you know, a lot of the guys are getting back to good health. The big key there is Lander Barton, the guy I mentioned earlier, and, you know, his recovery. He's back and he's working out, and he's a big piece to this puzzle for next season. And so I think he's the most important piece in terms of the injury coming back. Obviously Cam and Brandt, but, you know, they're going to be 18 months from their injury that they suffered, and they'll be in good shape. But for the most part, you know, Utah's, you know, pretty good health and trending the right way moving forward. But yeah, it was pretty wild for the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season. You know, it was an injury here, an injury there. We got to take this guy from the defense side of the ball, bring him to the offense side of the ball. Sione Vaki became one of the most dynamic two-way players, and that wasn't the plan for him at all. Like, he was going to be a defensive guy the entire way, but, you know, guys stepped up, and I think it speaks to the culture at Utah. You know, they talk about just nobody cares. It's the next man up mentality, and you know, the players bought into that and stepped up and helped Utah to, you know, to get some wins. Some big wins and some tough wins and some tough losses, but guys stepped up, and I think it just speaks to the culture up there at Utah.
So obviously a big change coming next year with Utah going to the Big 12 with the Arizona schools and Colorado. been asking, we had Chris Cartman and Jason Shear on from the Arizona schools last week or last couple of weeks. I don't know, like a month ago. Who knows? Time is a construct. But it's interesting the different temperatures of the fan base is for all these different schools with regard to, are they excited about it? Is there ambivalence about it? Are they actually negative about it? And the general sense was Arizona, pretty positive about it for basketball reasons. Arizona State, a little bit more trepidation. They liked being in the Pac-12. They liked the proximity to California. What's Utah's feeling about this? What's both the administrative level, but also the fan base level?
Well, I'll start with the fan base. The fan base is not too happy, with the move, right?
Yeah.
You go from, being in the Pac-12 with all these great schools, set in these great locations. It was every season you had a game to look forward to in terms of hitting the road and going to a great destination and just, again, being part of these schools. It really meant something to Utah fans who – going back over the years, right? It's been a long journey for Utah, going back to the Mountain West, right? And even before that in the WAC and all that, a lot of Utah fans have been through, some tough times, and to finally make it to the power level, of college football, to be involved, to be in the same conference with these great schools that many Utah fans watched from afar, it meant a lot, and it gained a lot of value, over the course of time as Utah, started to make their own way in the conference. And so, it's tough. It's tough for Utah fans. Obviously the administration did all that they could to try and keep the Pac-12 together. But ultimately, we're where we are, and they're looking ahead, and it'll be interesting with the move to the Big 12. Expectations are high for Utah, right? You come into the Pac-12, you finally climb that mountain in the Pac-12, win back-to-back conference championships, you're returning the bulk of your football roster, and expectations are quite high, and so that's led to some interesting dialogue and interactions with fans on Twitter and online and, Big 12, with other Big 12 programs. And so Utah fans aren't necessarily endearing themselves to, some of these new schools that they'll be will be competing against. But, overall, I think, it's tough for Utah fans to say goodbye to the Pac-12. I think Utah is going to go into the Big 12 with a certain mindset of, taking care of business and wanting to establish themselves, as a championship contender right away. And that's going to be the mentality that they take into the new league. Obviously, with the other sports, basketball, men's basketball in particular, it's a little bit different. Yeah. That's going to be a bit of a process. Women's basketball should hit the ground running. But in terms of football, yeah, expectations are certainly pretty high for the program moving forward.
Yeah, I don't watch a lot of college basketball, but it was number 6 versus number 2 last night, Houston versus Iowa State. There's a lot of really good programs in the Big 12 on the basketball side. It'll be interesting. But I think on the football side, I think Utah's going to fit in well. I mean, obviously you got to play, BYU's there. I don't know if Utah fans are familiar with that school at all, but there's just a lot of Utah's just been this program that's well coached and a good solid program. And it seems like there's a lot of programs like that in the Big 12. So you could have rock fights week after week, with all these teams that are they don't suck. They're pretty good. And on any given day, they could be really good and sometimes they're okay. But there just seems like there's a lot of kind of programs like that. So I think the storylines for Big 12 football next year are going to be good. Arizona, where are they going to be? They could be, they would look like they were rising until Fish left, but I think they're still going to be pretty good. Utah coming back with the Stars coming back. I think there's just going to be a lot of good programs in that league.
I agree, right? When you keep the focus to, what's happening on the field, in the stadium, right? There's going to be a lot of competitive matchups, a lot of competitive games, a lot of good storylines. But I think for Utah fans, you're looking at the schedule and you don't see that great matchup, right? We're talking, a lot of these teams are going to be good. They're going to be, you know, competitive, but there's not that great team like there was and has been in the Pac-12, where you always had these programs that kind of set the bar and set the mark high, right? Oregon, USC, Washington. You always had these other programs that provided these great matchups, these headline grabbing matchups. And it just feels like the Big 12, these are going to be competitive games. There's going to be interesting storylines. But is it that headline grabbing, get your attention, you know, primetime type of game? And you know, I think for a lot of Utah fans, there's some worry there that there's not going to be those sort of games. There's some concern. There's, you know, just, again, just missing the Pac-12. But, again, when you keep the focus on the field and you're looking at these teams and how competitive they'll be, it's going to be a competitive conference, right? Oklahoma State, TCU, Baylor, all of these programs have competed for the Big 12 championship with Oklahoma and Texas, you know, in the conference over the last few years. Iowa State had a good run under Matt Campbell. And when you look at, you know, a lot of these coaches across the Big 12, you know, there's some similarities to Kyle Whittingham, as you kind of alluded to there, Ryan, in the sense that, you know, these guys are well coached. They're going to be players that are developed over time, which is how Utah has found a lot of success as a program. So, yeah, a lot of similarities, and the football will be competitive. But it's just different. It's a different level. You know, there's just that the marquee matchups, you know, you're not seeing that necessarily on paper right now. But once we get to fall, I'm sure these games are still going to provide plenty of excitement.
So one thing that's always been curious to me, because there's a lot of rivalries in college sports, and there's obviously a lot of hatred and all that kind of stuff, and that's all in good fun. Like, but there's something unique about Utah BYU that I don't see often, which is like USC and UCLA, aside from a few outliers, a few crazy folk, everyone wants to see them play every year. Cal Stanford, everyone wants to see them play every year. Oregon, Washington, everyone wants to see them play every year. Utah fans, it sounds like to me, when I like see the tenor on Twitter, it's I never want to see those motherfuckers again in my life, and I never want to play them ever again. And I want to kind of investigate this a little bit, because look, I've watched BYU play UCLA a few times, and I've never seen a more nut punching team in the history of college football. Like what they do in terms of dirty play on the field. But is that the reason, or is it more than that? Like, what?
No.
Kind of give us the full.
Yeah.
Give us the full picture here.
Education on this.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong, David. There it is. You know, we would feel great if we never played those motherfuckers again. that is, you know, but no, but in all seriousness, like, it's a great rivalry. You know, it's heated. It's, you know, your neighbor is a BYU fan. Neighbor next to him is a Utah. It's so ingrained in the community here in Utah, this Utah BYU rivalry. It just extends to everything, every conversation, every little bit of life. This rivalry just finds a way to seep into, and it makes for, you know, a lot of heated debate, some delusional takes, some wild conversation, and, you know, it's interesting. So there's a lot of human elements that goes into this rivalry that makes it so heated. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm sure if you polled most Utah fans, I think, you know, most would be fine if this game wasn't played most years. You know, if this was, you know, every couple years or so, that would be fine. It's just, you know, when your best season is happens in the COVID year, or you finish in the Boca Raton Bowl and you're pounding your chest about how great a season it was and how you're going to dominate, you know, college football because you had this kid, you know, Zach Wilson just dominate, you know, through the air. It's just, you know, that's what we have to deal with, right? It's just tough, right? The fan base down there, the team down south, as some fans will call them, you know, it's just tough. But, you know, my best – and this – like, here's the thing, though. It's like my best friend, Jeff Hansen, who runs he runs the BYU site for 24/7 Sports. He's my best friend. And like, we'll joke about it. We'll talk about it. But it's like, when you get in this rivalry, it's just, man, no, there's no love lost. That's for sure.
That's funny. You can go to the stands for either one of the fans are usually pretty nice to you, but you feel like it's kind of like being nice to your face and then behind your back, who knows what's going to happen.
That's it. Like, it's all a front, man. It's all a front.
That's great. Utah's known, I mean, a lot of stability in the program. You've had Kyle Whittingham there for 48 years, whatever it's been, something in that range. I think there really hasn't been much turnover on the coaching staff. You want to kind of address that, but roster wise, you know, we're the era with the portal and everything. We've talked about a couple of the big names coming back. What's sort of been the, like, the pulse of the roster, like a bunch of guys left and new guys added, like what has that been like?
Yeah. So, you know, Utah's benefited from staff, you know, stability for a long time now, right? This staff has been together only a couple years, but the bulk of the staff has been together for, geez, 8-10 years now. It's, you know, it's not common, obviously, in college football. And so in terms of the roster, you know, Utah's been fortunate where I think they're still returning, you know, over 70% of the roster from last season. And obviously, once we get into spring, that post-spring cycle, there will probably be some additional attrition that we'll see. But, you know, Utah saw six guys declare for the draft. You know, only a few of them had the opportunity to return. A couple guys were just seniors that had to move on. There were 14 portal departures. And so you're talking about the loss of 20 guys with about five seniors that have moved on from the program. So 25 guys total were lost this season. They're about there, which is, you know, that's a victory in today's college football, right?
Yeah, that's on the low end for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like total. I mean, like to have that many guys total, like with depart, I mean, yeah, that's rare.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's an accomplishment for Utah to return the bulk of the roster. And this is still a roster where, you know, a lot of these guys have, whether they played or they were backing up or were on the roster, they've been, you know, in competitive environments, competitive situations, playing competitive football. So, you know, Utah's fortunate in that regard. And that's where a lot of the confidence comes from, is that, you know, this is a roster that's proven that they can, you know, compete for conference championships. And so, you know, they're in good shape. They've returned, you know, a good chunk, the majority of the roster, 60, 70%, somewhere in there. You know, and then they've added, you know, a lot of good pieces through the transfer portal. You know, Carson Ryan, Dorian Singer, two guys that you two are familiar with. And for Utah, those are, you know, significant additions to that wide receiver and tight end room. Which will help them on that side of the ball. And then defense, you know, they just have a way of finding guys that fit what they do, fit their persona, fit their culture, and just find success year in and year out on that side of the ball. So, you know, overall, the roster is in great shape. You know, they're expecting a little bit more attrition in the spring portal window, but they, you know, feel confident that they'll be able to address, you know, a lot of those departures as well.
Kyle Whittingham, as Ryan said, he's been there for between 40 and 60 years. There was talk a couple years ago, obviously dealing with a lot of the tragic events that were happening around Utah, that he was maybe getting a little bit towards the end, you know, thinking about retirement and all of that. What's the sense of that now? I mean, Utah is obviously embarking on a completely new challenge. Is that invigorating for him? Is it something that you think he'll want to stick around for it? And what is the succession plan now? Because I know there was Morgan Scalley was the kind of heir apparent for a while. Then he had obviously the controversy with what was it, the text messages? Yep. Where does he stand in terms of his status as, you know, next in line? Is there another option? And also, is that even something you need to be concerned about? Is Kyle Whittingham going to stay for another 5 years?
Man, you know, like you said, it seemed a couple years ago that, you know, time was winding down, you know, and pretty quickly. But it seems like this season, for whatever reason, you know, he found a little bit little bit more energy, juice to keep going. But I still think we're talking about, you know, 1 year at a time for him. And this season could be it. Maybe he decides to come back for 2025. But I think we're getting to that point where it's a year by year thing with Kyle Whittingham. And so, you know, I think that's where we're at with him. But, you know, he's in a great situation because, again, getting back to the staff continuity, and just the having that staff together for as long as they've been together now, I think that has helped him to kind of keep going, you know, even despite all of these new new things and all of this that they have to navigate now in college football with NIL, with the transfer portal, even with all of that, having that staff around him that's been around him for so long, that's allowed him to stick around and to find that juice and energy to keep going. So, you know, Kyle's still, man, he's still going, he's still strong, but I think it's best to kind of take this year by year with him. So we could see him, you know, hang it up after the season. If, you know, things go a certain way, we'll see. And then after Kyle Whittingham, I think Morgan Scali is still in a position where he's probably the odds on favorite to succeed him. He's kind of taken on more responsibility in terms of, you know, assuming some of those, you know, head coaching responsibilities. He's been more active and vocal and more present online than what we've seen in years past. And so, you know, he's certainly acting the part in some regards. And so we'll see. But I think I would not be surprised if, you know, they take this to a coaching search and vet some, you know, and just kind of go through that process. But I still think Morgan Scali, if we're talking right now today, I still think Morgan Scali is the favorite to succeed Whittingham.
It, you know, when you go to a new conference, like if Utah goes in and wins the Big 12 in year one, I could see maybe he would retire after that. But like sometimes you just go to a new place, it's like a whole new challenge. Yeah. And it could be like, oh, it's add a few years to whatever you were planning on doing. So
that would be absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a great point, right? Is this new challenge, and he's a guy that he wants to put Utah in the best situation possible. He takes a lot of pride in what he's built and going into that new conference with new challenges. You know, he's the sort that, you know, he wants to succeed and, you know, overcome a lot of those challenges. So it can be reinvigorating for him, I'm sure.
I want to look at the, we know the Big 12 schedule came out a month or two ago. I'll kind of go over that with you. And then we have a few fan questions, unless you have anything else, David, but the out of conference games, Southern Utah and Baylor, which is interesting because that's a Big 12 team, but in Rice-Eccles and then going to Utah State. And then for the Big 12 schedule, starts off at Oklahoma State, Arizona at home, followed by a road game against Arizona State, TCU at home, road game to Houston, that BYU game on November 9th. I know Amy in the chat wanted it to be rivalry weekend, but that's in Rice-Eccles. At Colorado, familiar one there, Iowa State at home, and then UCF on the road. So the final one is the long road trip all the way to Florida. But any kind of initial thoughts, you know, no back-to-back road games or anything. Well, I guess the one, the early season one, yeah, at Utah State and Oklahoma State. But
yeah, the first road games are back-to-back, but yeah.
Well, I mean, it's an out-of-conference game. It's Utah State. Mm. It's not.
It says, oh, do out-of-conference, you don't have to travel for road games in out-of-conference?
You can drive to that one. It's not a flight, dumbass.
I did the same thing. I'm laughing because I did the same thing and somebody corrected me. Yeah. So I'm reliving that pain, Ryan. That's why I'm laughing.
You could drive to London, right? Is that's a drive?
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's a decent drive. You know, right. Yeah, they'll probably take the buses for it. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I think this schedule, it sets up nicely. I think the thing that stands out most, honestly, is probably that UCF game. You know, Thanksgiving weekend in Orlando. I think that game just jumps out as just, what are we doing here? What is going on with this schedule? But, you know, just, and I think that speaks to just how nicely the rest of the schedule sets up for Utah, right? So you've got you had a conference. There's no Florida this year, which is great, but also bad. But great because, you know, that's a tough game. That's a tough contest. And Utah doesn't need to beat themselves up to win that game again this year. But Baylor, obviously, that was an out-of-conference game that was scheduled years ago that they couldn't find a replacement for, so they keep that as a non-conference game. And then as you get into, Big 12 play, it starts on the road at Oklahoma State, and that's going to be a challenge. Oklahoma State, they're bringing back the top running back in college football. Obviously, Utah, their MO is stopping the run. That's what Kyle Whittingham preaches. It's all about the run game and stopping the run and establishing the run. So that'll be a fun contest. Coming home to Arizona, Arizona's coming off a bye before that game. And so that's going to be a really tough challenge for Utah, especially coming off of that Oklahoma State. So, getting to it right out the gate with probably two of your toughest games on the schedule against Oklahoma State and Arizona, then you get the bye. And this is new, like the Big 12, you get two byes. Is this just new in the Big 12, or is this across the board where everybody gets two byes?
I think it's the calendar this year for whatever reason. Yeah, it's like everyone's getting two byes. I forgot what the
cool.
The
Well, I thought that was a Big 12 perk, so, geez. but Utah gets the bye after week five, and then they get another one, I think, 4 or 5 weeks later. So it sets up nicely for them where they can kind of break this season up into thirds. They've got two four-game stretches and then a five-game stretch, I think. I think that's what it is. Maybe four. I don't know. But anyways, two byes. Spread out evenly. The second bye, obviously the week before the BYU game, and BYU also gets a bye week before that game as well. So that's the marquee matchup. When this initially came out, I was a little surprised that wasn't the Thanksgiving week, rivalry week game. That's a great rivalry. It's obviously being here in Utah, you live it every day, but that's a great game to highlight. But the Big 12 decided that they wanted to feature that game a little bit earlier in the season, which I also understand, which is something that they do with Oklahoma and have done with Oklahoma and Texas playing that game earlier in the year. I'm not comparing that to the Red River Shootout, but it's a very competitive rivalry, and I think getting both teams off a bye, that should make for a pretty tough game. So overall, like the schedule sets up really nicely for Utah in the sense that they're coming into this wanting to compete for a championship, and there's nothing with this schedule that kind of impedes their chances at contending for a championship. There's no back-to-back roadies. There's no wild, you've got a Saturday late night game and then a Friday game the next week where you're on a short week. There's none
Back-to-back
of that.
Specials,
a lot of those. So that's kind of nice as well. But overall, it's a solid schedule. And like I said, it sets up nicely for Utah.
We have a few questions in the chat. Do you have anything else, David? You want me to get into those?
No, let's go to the chat.
Okay. So Amy, our resident Utah fan, even though we love Cam, how is Utah building a better depth at the quarterback position? Pig Farmer was fine, but who will step up in case, knock on wood, Cam gets injured again?
Yeah, this season was it was a rough one for the quarterback situation at Utah, obviously without Cam. Kind of highlighted some deficiencies in that room. Bryson did his best. If we compare, have you guys ever been to a nuclear reactor?
No.
No, I don't think so.
I haven't either, but I've seen Chernobyl. And so I've seen, nuclear reactor. There's a lot of big dials.
Like up close?
Little knobs.
No,
just inside, just like, what is that?
Inside
like
the reactor. Lab?
Yeah. Inside the reactor where
after
you control things. No, not after, before.
You've got rods. Yeah, I get it.
Bryson set off the reactors, what I'm trying to get to, where essentially, he had a good understanding of how the big dials, where the big dials were supposed to be, but the little switches to fine tune the nuclear reactor, just he didn't have a grasp of that sort of
thing.
And so other quarterbacks in the room weren't developed properly or just weren't at a place in their game where they could contribute and take control of the job. So, Utah with Cam coming back, they bring in Isaac Wilson from Corner Canyon, highly touted 4-star quarterback out of Corner Canyon, which has produced a lot of good quarterbacks in recent years. Devin Brown at Ohio State, Jackson Dart, USC, Ole Miss. And so you're bringing in him, you're bringing back Brandon Rose, who was injured, freak accident in fall camp cost him the season. I think he lacerated his liver, I think is what it was.
There was a lot of like internal organs that were lacerated last year, spleens and yeah.
Yep. It was pretty wild. Yeah, it was pretty wild. So the quarterback situation, you know, Utah's got three in the room right now that they feel good about. Brandon Rose will be entering year three with the program. You know, he's got to make strides to kind of solidify, you know, the depth here. But Utah, they weren't able to bring in a transfer quarterback during the winter portal cycle. But that's priority number one for them, you know, as we move forward. They want to bring in a fourth quarterback, preferably one from the transfer portal that has D1 experience to come in and provide depth. That's going to be the big key for Utah moving forward. They want to bring in, you know, a transfer to just really round out the depth of that room and just solidify it. So that's the hope. And then, you know, when you look ahead, you know, in the 2025 class, they already have two quarterback commits. So they've also brought in this. We didn't talk about this with the staff, but they brought in Corey Dennis from Ohio State, who was the quarterback coach there. He's coming in. He's coming to Utah to be an offensive personnel analyst, kind of like akin to Cliff Kingsbury. I think that's the sort of role that he had at USC. So kind of similar there. And when you look at Corey Dennis and what he did at Ohio State. You know, he was the primary recruiter for the quarterback position. And, you know, obviously the quarterbacks that they brought in there, you know, you don't need to go through them. They've been
pretty
good.
Special,
so, yeah. So Utah is taking steps to really kind of help themselves at that quarterback position.
And we had one from Eric. Is Utah the favorite to win the Big 12? I would imagine they are in the top three.
Yeah, according to most, I mean, you look at the win total projections for next year, they're top two with Kansas State right there. They're going to be top three, according to most folks. And obviously, with so much roster change for a lot of these programs, you know, it provides a unique dynamic of just what exactly are these teams going to be? Who's going to take that leap? Is there any Noah Fifita out there next season who comes in off the bench and, you know, turns the fortunes of a program around? You know, there's always that sort of storyline. But I think coming into the season, yeah, Utah is going to be a top two, top three type of favorite in the Big 12.
And then we got one last one from our buddy Eddie in Orange. Is it true that Cam Rising was David Woods' babysitter?
Absolutely. 100%. Cam, again, he's been around a long time. It's amazing that he still, you know, he has the hair, the facial hair. It's all still colorful and beautiful. David's got the gray coming in the beard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how he does
I've
it.
I've aged terribly.
Terribly.
He's aging well.
Yeah. So it is true.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're doing the podcast of champions, at least for another year or two. So we get to get, you know, the sophomore and junior years of Cam Rising. So, by 2027, we might not have the show.
I want to see how this little baby grows.
I wanted to ask you guys that. Are you guys like going to keep doing this? Like, because you guys, I mean, you guys dipped. You guys bounced. You left us.
We bailed.
Well,
we did.
Yeah. We had no choice in any of that. So the plan, I mean, it's like, I think we were so bad at creating a podcast for the Pac-12 that all these other podcasts about the Pac-12 sprouted up. They're like, wow, if these guys are doing it, we could do it too. Now everyone has this dilemma of like, well, now what the hell do we do?
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people, what we've decided to do is continue to cover the 12 teams, the formerly known as the Pac-12 teams, at least for this season. It's going to be harder to do like, are we breaking down Utah UCF the same way we would Utah Oregon State? Like, no, but you know, we'll talk about all those things, but it's almost like every week will be like an out of conference week where we did the out of conference games. It was like, okay, we're talking about 11, 12 games. And then in conference it's like five or six. Well, that's going to blow up. So it's going to be, the shows will be a little bit different. We'll see, but probably a little less in depth on everyone, but we still want to talk about the Pac-12 teams at least for one more year and kind of figure it out from there.
Yeah. That means a lot.
Yeah.
This has been the podcast of choice for the Pac-12. I never listened to it, but I always read the reviews. The reviews were great.
Thanks, man.
I know you guys are doing a good job.
Appreciate
that. We try. And if people are like, oh, you're like, and the good thing is for most of the run of we've been here, both USC and UCLA have been like blowy. So we could like make fun of the schools that we cover. So people aren't like, you're just like a homer or whatever. Like, no, yeah. We're like trashing.
No,
the
no, no. I hate the school I cover. I just can't shake them.
Oh, my God.
But thanks, man. We appreciate it. Coming in, it's the fun stuff. And
Make sure
you go over to utzone.com. I know, I don't think Amy was a subscriber, a Utah fan. Amy, get in there and subscribe. Come on. Like, what are you doing?
What are we doing?
Come on, Amy.
What kind of game is this?
Eddie, you too.
Yeah, Eddie.
Eddie and Orange. I think he's a USC guy, but he loves, I think he just loves.
We don't discriminate. Well. You can subscribe to Utzone, whether USC, Oregon, whatever fan.
Nice. And Eric, he has got a duck logo. Eric was missing. I mean, he has a lot of respect for Utah. He was going to miss those games. So we had some kumbaya moments in the chat while this was all going on. So it is kind of sad. Yep. Like
it is.
I'm looking at every time we talk to Cartman or Shear. Now we're talking to you about like the schedule. And it's just like, oh, well, there's that Arizona State game. Like they're kind of familiar. And then all these other teams, like, what the hell is this? Like, it's just really weird.
Yep. It's a weird dynamic, man. It's, you know, obviously there's a certain level of excitement going into the new league, but man, there's a lot of pain, a lot of sadness saying goodbye to the Pac-12. It's been a great run all around. All
right. Well, Steve Bartle, we really appreciate you coming in.
Appreciate you guys.
If you want to know more about the Utah Utes, make sure you go check out the Ute Zone over there. So, Steve, thanks again for coming in.
No problem.
Appreciate you, Steve.
Everyone else, we'll be back in a minute.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
To the side. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
All righty. I think we're back. Just you and me.
Just us?
Just us kids? Just us kids.
Wow. Here we are.
What'd you think? We got a lot of Ute talk.
That was a lot of Ute talk from Steve Bartle. Tremendous man, tremendous beard.
He does have a good beard.
It's a very good beard. It looks like mine used to look before I became an ancient mariner of 38.
I don't know how old Steve is.
So I was like lightly talking a little shit at somebody on Twitter the other day, and he responded with, "Well, it wasn't intentional. It wasn't. It wasn't really intentional. It was just something where I like said, oh yeah, I couldn't watch that because I was gonna cringe." But anyway, he comes back at me and he says, you know, you could try to be nicer, you know, instead of being like a, you know, one of these 50 plus year old sports writers. And I'm like,
I'm 38, damn, mother.
He's not even intending that. And that's like brutal. Fuck.
Oh, nice.
38 years old. I just, you know, I've had two children. I actually gave birth to them.
You did. Yeah.
It was war on my body.
I forgot to talk to Steve. He put five things to love about the Utah football. Check it out over on Ute Zone. So that was a good piece. Cam Rising kind of leading the way. Also, Big 12 Media Days are going to be in Vegas. So someone tweeted at me that was like, okay, now you have another excuse to go to Vegas. Like, I got to go to Big 12 Media Days because, you know.
Got to cover your teams.
Yeah, got to cover the four corners.
When are they going to put Big 10 Media Days in Vegas?
I made some inquiries, but I think the guy that I knew that was working in the Big Ten office, I think he left. So I need to like get some new contacts there. But I meant to go the last 2 years. I didn't end up going.
Nobody
I think I
wants to go to Indianapolis or whatever.
Yeah, I don't really want to do that. But they should definitely have it in Vegas.
They should also do the Big Ten tournament in Vegas. Nobody wants to go to Chicago for that.
True. Yeah,
Vegas. All of it in Vegas.
Everything should be Vegas.
Everything should be in Vegas.
I love that.
Come on.
All right. Well, we got a few questions to get through, but we got some, our buddy, our pal, George K. George, Kalyavkov. Do we have the, I don't know if I have the Kalyavkov thing anymore.
Yeah,
I
used to
have
we don't that need
sound.
That.
Oh, no, that sound. He is out as of what, 11 days from now?
Yeah.
Yeah. March 1st. So we had a couple of years left on his deal. The Pac-12 board, which is Oregon State and Washington State now, the board of directors announced that they have mutually agreed to part ways effective February 29th, 2024. So I guess 9 days from now.
Yeah.
And then the new leadership is Teresa Gould, who everyone had thought she would be the new commissioner of the Pac 12/2. I guess she gets to be the Pac-12 for a couple months, and then it's going to be the Pac-2. She's the first ever female commissioner of the in a Power 5 conference, Autonomy 5, they're calling it, which that's going away. But she gets to be that for a couple months, and then there won't be any Power 5 anymore. But yeah, so everyone thought that she would be the logical choice. You needed to get George out of there. He was just kind of hanging around, really hadn't spoken publicly. I don't know, like 6 months or something like that. It's been a while. But yeah, any thought? I mean, we knew it was coming. It's just kind of, it's finally here.
I thought it had already happened.
It's like one of those things like, oh, I thought he was already dead.
No, it feels like one of those situations like in Office Space where it's like, oh, we fixed the glitch. Nobody told him he was fired, but we have fixed the glitch where he was still getting paid. That's what happened here. Oh, that guy's still around?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. We got to take care of that.
Well, you get like the celebrity death and you're like, oh, I thought he was already dead. Like that was one of those things.
I mean, they might have needed to pay a buyout. Who knows?
There was. I think he was getting like $3.5 million a year.
Well, that might have been, they were waiting to get the payout from the other bit of breaking news where they got a few extra million for the next couple of years as compensation for not staying in the playoff picture. Kalyavkov, tenure, undone by, factors external to his control and also by factors, under his control.
Yeah.
Didn't do a good job. Wasn't the job he signed up for. I feel for him personally, but at the same time,
I liked him,
but at the same time,
but he wasn't good.
He wasn't the guy to, try to, wrangle the already, breaking apart conference and put it back together. Maybe if they'd hired him 3 or 4 years earlier and gotten rid of Larry Scott earlier, maybe he would have been the guy. But he wasn't. He wasn't the kind of transformative figure that they needed to fix what was broken. And that's really the long and the short of it. And now he's been hanging around for 7 months or whatever after the thing's already dead.
Yeah, the terms of the deal weren't disclosed. I think Wilner wrote about it. But he believed he was making like the liability was probably being like $7 million range, and then you could split it up between the schools. So there, whatever they negotiated, I mean, he probably got less than that, but he still got some money and stuff. So yeah, this is just sort of like the inevitable thing that needed to happen. Eddie and Orange is saying that he just renewed a subscription to the P. So he's a sorry, Steve, he's a USC guy. So thanks, Eddie, for that. I don't know if Amy said if she's subscribing or not, so you got to get in there. Yeah, if whatever program you're a fan of, like if for some reason you like UCLA, I mean, that seems really weird, but go over to Bro and sign up and get a membership there.
Do it.
You know, you should
subscribe.
Subscribe. Helps everybody helps everybody else out. Okay. Some other news. Did you see that Arizona has an athletic director?
Arizona Wildcats.
She was formerly at UNLV and then Missouri, and I believe got her law degree at Arizona. Desiree Reed Francois.
Hey, interesting. Tell me, where did she go and get her bachelor's degree?
Was it UCLA?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and tell me, was she available as an athletic director when UCLA was last hiring an athletic director?
Yes, she was. Like,
okay.
She took the Missouri job.
Interesting.
Her name came up for the USC search, too.
Arizona, just out here hiring people UCLA should have hired at all levels all the time.
Yeah, I think it's a really good hire. To go from an SEC school to the Big Ten, you know, Big 12, I like that. So well done there. But, yeah, so Arizona's got their athletic director.
Yes.
And another good hire, another hire that makes sense, that the folks in Westwood are going to go, why don't we do stuff like that?
Yep.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned this earlier. Mm-hmm. So I haven't read this yet. I didn't even realize there was going to be financial compensation.
So you've been paying more attention to like what the actual format was supposed to be. And so apparently this is a change of some sort. But in any event,
so
they're
now
doing 12 teams, and it's the 5 highest ranked conference title winners and then 7 at large.
So it was 6 and 6 because there was a power 5.
Whatever.
And then you would get one group of 5.
Who gives a shit? Apparently they spent months figuring this out because the Pac-12 was holding it up.
Right.
Washington State
was holding it up.
They're not calling it directly a quid pro quo, but Oregon State and Washington State are going to get a little extra money for the next couple of years.
Okay.
Because they agreed to stop holding up the process.
I believe they were holding out. Yeah. And right. So they weren't going to say, well, the Pac-2 is going to get an automatic bid or whatever. So that's...
Yeah, I mean, who gives a fuck? It's going to be really stupid.
Okay. So they will get a little...
12 teams is super dumb.
Washington State and Oregon State, I feel like they're like looking for handouts wherever they can get it.
12 teams is the dumbest possible construction, right? We all agree.
You know, as soon as I heard 12, I didn't like it. But the more I see it, I kind of like it. I kind of like the 4 byes. Like you get a bye week. I think that's kind of cool.
I think it's stupid. I think it's really dumb.
But I would like to see more.
You'd like to see more.
I'd like the bye teams to be able to have a home game too.
If you're doing a stupid tournament, embrace the stupid tournament. If you're trying to determine the best,
whatever.
If you're trying to determine the best team, don't have a stupid tournament. Don't do this middle ground bullshit. Don't reward 4 teams. Like, why is the cutoff 4 teams? What if the difference between the 4th and the 5th team is way, way less than the difference between the 4th and the 3rd team?
Very likely. Very likely.
Like, what are we doing here? It's stupid. Instead, just do 8 teams. Or do 16. I don't really care. It's all very stupid. But 12 was the absolute worst possible construction of this stupid thing.
Okay. I mean, I don't mind 12.
Mm.
I think, but I would like to see if you're 1, 2, 3, or 4, you should get a home game. Like right now, they don't, right? If you're 5, you get a home game. I'd like to see the top teams get a home game too. So maybe 16 would be better and everyone that's good gets a home game. And then you kind of play in neutral sites from there.
Why?
Well, I mean, neutral sites, or at least for the semifinals. Like, I don't mind if you do two rounds of home games. Like, if you do a 16-team tournament, I think it'd be kind of fun. But as of now, right, it's like 8 versus 12.
Mm-hmm.
It's the at 8, right? You get a home game.
Yeah, there. But, okay, so Michigan.
And then after that, I think it's I think after that it's neutral sites.
Look, Michigan doesn't want to play a fucking game in mid-December in Ann Arbor. Like, nobody wants to do that. Nobody. Not even the team that would be the home team. Like, just do it all in neutral sites, all of them in the southwestern desert. Who cares?
All of them in Vegas?
All of them. Like, have it just be
okay,
like...
I would listen to that.
The tournament weekend where they all play their games in Vegas. Like,
this, that would be freaking awesome. Dude, like, I mean, Allegiant Stadium, like, just from like 9 a.m. until.
If you're
like,
going to borrow the stupidity and fun of the NCAA tournament, just do it like the NCAA tournament. None of this NIT bullshit of playing home games. No, all on neutral sites. And you get the neutral site closest to your home stadium if you're one of the higher ranked teams.
Mm.
Yeah. No. Okay. No home games.
But everything in Vegas.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right.
We got questions.
Let me see. We had one in the chat from, this is Amy again. She's very active. She was big into the Utah day. Who would you have want to see as head coach for Utah?
I mean, I think the thing there is program continuity is probably the biggest factor with Utah, because I don't think it's the biggest factor when you don't have a successful program, but when you have a successful one, that's probably what you want. So I don't know if it's Scally. I mean, it feels like the whole texting slurs to people kind of got swept under the rug, but he did do that. Has his, I don't know, judgment improved considerably since then? I mean, that was only in 2013. That's way past the time when anybody should have been nobody should have ever been texting slurs, but kind of got to a point there where it's, you know, that's a real. And I don't know that we ever saw the text messages themselves. I don't know what slur.
I think all that stuff would start to come out and it would just be kind of murky.
Maybe we did. I honestly don't remember. But I mean, if he passes some sort of actual vetting, maybe it's him, but I would think just you'd want continuity from Whittingham, because the program has been awesome.
Awesome. But if you don't have, like, this is for sure the heir apparent, and if there's questions around Scally, and I know there's some Utah fans that wouldn't want to see that. I mean, bringing in another hard-nosed coach from outside that, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't mind that either. I mean, someone that could embrace the culture that he established, but if you don't have someone, it's just basically you're just doing a very light version of Whittingham. And I think I'd rather just bring someone that has their own program building ideals, but also could embrace everything Whittingham did.
You just have USC PTSD.
What do you mean?
Because you saw this happen. You saw Pete Carroll and then Lane Kiffin.
Anyone that was associated.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just because you're associated with Kyle Whittingham doesn't mean you're going to be good. Like, Scally would probably make the most sense if there wasn't that kind of...
It's basically a question of, is it Boise State or is it USC? Like, is it the kind of job where the only thing that matters is the culture and continuing the culture and the recruiting apparatus and all that kind of stuff? Or was Kyle Whittingham such a transformative figure that you're not going to duplicate him?
Yeah,
I lean more towards the former, not the latter with him. I think Kyle Whittingham is a really good coach, but Utah's been a pretty good program, and they're a pretty good program under Urban Meyer before they went to Kyle Whittingham. I think it's sort of like the almost the Oregon thing, where they didn't have a bad coach from basically the end of the Rich Brooks era on. You know, it was just kind of inheriting the apparatus and doing all that kind of stuff. So, and I don't know, Utah's not at that level. Like, it's not Phil Knight benefactor that's the biggest factor. But I think that continuity feels more important there than it does with, like, what USC went through. Because Pete Carroll was in a lot of ways the program. Like what he was doing, his energy, his recruiting ability, his personal like drive and verve and all that kind of stuff was such a big factor. I don't know that Kyle Whittingham is that like essential to the process. I think he's a guy who started the process, but if somebody's a real bought into that, they can make this work too.
Yeah. All right, we got a voicemail, and then I think that'll be it.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. In plenty of past episodes, you guys have talked about, from a business standpoint, how well you guys do at your 247 sites when your team has a job change. And in this most recent round, Dave, I was curious, from a business standpoint, do you wish the search went on a little bit longer? Would have that done anything business-wise, or would the bigger difference have been had the coaching search taken place in November instead of February? Just kind of curious to see what it's like from that angle and what you experienced this time around. Thanks, guys.
Great question. First, yes, would have preferred a longer search from a strictly business angle. Second, I don't know how much of a factor it would have been November versus February. I think the November one, the only reason it would have been a factor is because recruiting is in full swing at that point. So on top of the hire itself, you then get a lot of news drip immediately about like, oh, they're going out and offering this guy, they're bringing in this whole crew of guys on official visits. February, you don't get that. So I think all things considered, for so many different reasons, UCLA should have been doing this in November and not in February. Huge own goal kicked by the UCLA administration. But I mean, I think with there's a point at which a coaching search goes on too long, and it starts to have diminishing returns. But even those diminishing returns are still pretty good for business. So like a 3 or 4 day search is not, you know, still good, but it's not ideal.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely changed. I mean, there's a lot going on at the end of the season. And just so much gets piled on top of each other. It used to be better when February was the signing period. Now you're doing like all the signing stuff while the bowl game's going on and coaching searches are happening. Like, there's just a lot kind of going on at once. So maybe having a search outside of that normal window, there's some benefits there, but it's also, yeah, it's just, we're in a weird time. It's just, things have changed. Like, I think the whole industry's changed and the timelines for things have changed. And I think we have not insignificant group of fans that are not happy with the overall state of the sport in college football. And I think you've talked about this before where you could be selling your soul and you're making more money now, but are you losing in the long term because people are not into the way this sport is going? And I guess time will tell for that one.
That's true.
All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap things up.
Was Eric's not from, did we already do that one?
Which one was Eric?
It's the one from February 15th.
Oh, we didn't do the email. I'm sorry. Yes, yes.
Yeah, we haven't done, there's two emails.
Oh, is there two? Okay.
Yeah, one just came in.
Okay.
All right, I'll read Eric's. Big Ten Network. Hi, guys. I was happy to see that Chip finally convinced someone to hire him away from UCLA, and I'm holding out hope for Coach Foster. I got the email from UCLA announcing the hire in the press conference, which indicated that the press conference would be on the Pac-12 network. At the start of the press conference, I switched channels to the Pac-12 network, but to my surprise, not really surprised, it was not on. Instead, the replay of the Cal versus USC basketball game was on. However, do you know what channel was actually prepared to carry the press conference? It was the Big Ten Network. The Big Ten Network even had a mini pre-press conference show. I was shocked. At the end of the press conference, the Pac-12 network immediately resumes showing the replay of the Cal versus USC basketball game, while the Big Ten network had a mini post-press conference show with in-studio analysis of the speeches by Jarmond and Foster. The press conference was likely the very last live, non-sports broadcast by the Pac-12 network, and it was handled very horribly. This just summed up the Pac-12 network failure. Lastly, the football uniforms that were on display at the Foster press conference had the Big Ten logo patch on them instead of the Pac-12 logo patch, and it was cool, yet sad to see. I'll miss the Pac-10, Pac-12 conference, the horrible reffing, and Pac-12 After Dark. Thanks, Eric F. P.S. Since you guys are having a guest come in to discuss the now defunct Pac-12 schools, what are the chances of having Tracy come in as the guest for UCLA? I know Dave covers UCLA, but it would be great to have all three of you guys on one podcast in a way to truly put the Pac-12 conference to bed.
We already talked to UCLA last week.
That's true.
But we could, at the end, we could bring Tracy on too.
Yeah. So for the Pac-12 network, Big 12, Big 10 network. Did I say Big 12 at the beginning? I think I did. Big 10 network.
Okay.
It's the B1G. Can we stop saying that? It's stupid. It's Big 10. Just call it the Big 10. Anyway.
B1G. I just put that up there.
Anyway. One thing I will say, in fairness to the Pac-12 network, they have been shuttering things all year, and they have been really, really stripping things down all year beyond what they had already been doing. Yes, they're horrible. Yes, they've done a bad job with a lot of kind of behind-the-scenes production stuff, but they don't even have studio apparatus set up in some places anymore. They're having to do some very stripped down things as they kind of put this whole thing to bed. So wouldn't give them too hard of a time.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm curious to see what, even at the Pac-12. Oh, was it Pac-12 championship game? They didn't have a show. There were some stuff going, talk to Yogi and everything. And it was just,
Well, they used to have studio space set up on campuses to do quick hitters and stuff. But now they're having to they used to have live remote setups where a coach could be on with a background and stuff.
Yeah.
They even got rid of a lot of that stuff. It's not very good.
No. And just trying to keep everything alive for the next few months. I mean, these are people's lives that you're messing with. They have jobs. If they can get a job somewhere else, it's how do you have everyone there long enough to keep the lights on and keep everything working? I think there's a big challenge there. So it'll be interesting to see what Washington State, Oregon State do, what the assets there and what they can do with it. I'm not sure. We have one other email from Colt, future baby names. Ryan and Dave, great news. My wife and I just found out we are expecting our first baby. Well, congratulations. We've used a lot of applause.
Very proud. Very happy.
Very, very awesome. Congratulations to you. In place of traditional names, can you give us both a boy version and a girl version of the most Pac-12 name possible? Thanks for the help. Keep up the great work, Colt. And he says, P.S., can't wait to start the baby's college fun with our winnings in Vegas at the craps table.
All right, so first you start with all of the Pac-12 cities, because city names work. My kids are Berkeley and Abilene, so the first one is actually a Pac-12 name right there. So there's one. But there's also, you can do Pullman for a boy. Not a great name, but you can do it.
Okay.
You can do Eugene.
Ah, yeah.
It's old. It's an old name, but you could do it.
Kind of nerdy. Connotations.
Corvallis is interesting. That feels like it could go either way. That feels like it could be a girl or a boy.
Yeah.
You can't do Salt Lake.
I think Corvallis is kind of badass.
Yeah. You can't do Salt Lake City. That's not real.
No.
Boulder.
Maybe not Boulder.
Boulder, if you're really going for that with a boy's name, you could do. Berkeley, I recommend it. My daughter likes it. Stanford. You could just name your kid Stanford. That would be obnoxious. You can't do Los Angeles. No. You can't do Westwood. What is USC? Figueroa? Figueroa would be interesting.
Oh, Figueroa is a good one. Yeah.
Tucson doesn't work. Tempe is interesting, but no, I don't think that works.
I know a Tempe.
You know a Tempe?
One of my buddies married a Tempe.
Okay. Interesting.
I don't know if it's spelled the same way.
Then you could also go kind of esoteric. You could go Evergreen. You could go Pacifica. You could go, some sort of ocean or sea type thing.
Palouse?
No. Ooh, the Palouse. Palousie? Ooh, Palousie.
Palousie.
Yeah, just go and go with a L-U-C-Y. And PA at the front, Palousie.
Okay.
You like that?
I do. I came up with
it. I kind of like that. you can go Willamette.
Oh, yeah.
Or you could just go Willa for a girl.
Willa, yeah.
That's kind of pretty. And then you're getting the Willamette. It's not Willamette. It's not Willamette. All right, you friggin' Oregonians. It's Willamette. We've all seen the word. Don't make me pronounce it in your fucked up way.
Every time I say it, it's wrong, so I never even say it anymore.
You know? I mean, there's a lot. You could then go into like the cups. You could go territorial.
Mm.
No. You could go
civil.
Victory.
Civil's a
victory.
Victory. Okay.
Yeah. You could go
Puget.
Apple.
Okay.
Like Gwyneth. Apple's the like name. Gwyneth Paltrow's kid.
Yeah.
You could go civil.
For Civil War.
Yeah. You could do big.
What about Axe?
Big game.
Axe?
Oh, wow. What's his last name? Big Game Bush? That'd be amazing.
I love it.
You could go Axe. You could go Bell. I mean, there's a lot of really good options, obviously. I mean, we're champions.
Champion. Yeah.
Just champion. What about champion?
Champions.
That kind of works.
I don't know.
And then you could also go funny. You could go Larry Scott. George Kliavkov. You could go Don James. You could go Terry Donahue. You could go Pete Carroll. Mm. You know, there's lots of different options here. So, you know, just really expand your scope. Think about all the different ways. But, you know, if I had to pick, I'd pick a city name. They're okay.
That's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about mascots? Like, could you do? I don't think the mascots probably wouldn't work.
No, I mean you could go Joe Bruin.
Bruins, like, well, Bruin.
Oh yeah, yeah, Bruin. Trojan, no, Trojan.
Not Trojan.
Well,
Bruin.
There's some people named like Trajan. Well, like okay. In ancient times. Cardinal, no. Bear. I mean, I've seen bears.
Bear, yeah, but you could do bear.
Wildcat, no. Sun Devil, that might be a little extreme.
Leave it to Beaver. We have
Beef. Ute. Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Husky.
Sun Devil would work.
Probably don't name a girl Husky.
No.
It's
kind of sexist of you, by
Cougar.
The
way. Duck. Duck feels like a nickname. Maybe you go with like a Doug and you call him Duck.
Sun Devil, like, would that be an actual name? Like someone, like, hey, I'm Sun
I think
Devil.
You'd have to put it all together and go like Sundevil.
Sundevil?
Sundevil.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, you could do that too. Yeah, I think there's a lot of really good options out there.
Cole, hopefully we helped. But the fact that you actually have like a Berkeley in your household is pretty crazy.
Well, and that was our first, and so joking like with the second, like what Pac-12 city name should we do for this one? Yeah,
great. You've mentioned Vegas a lot. We haven't mentioned so Dave and I will both be there starting March 13th. I will be the 13th. You are coming the 14th for the final ever Pac-12 basketball tournament.
And we're joining forces.
Yes.
And by this, we mean we have allowed the No Truck Stops podcast to do 100% of the planning.
Yes.
And by joining forces, we basically agreed to not have a conflicting get-together. But in any event, we're going to meet up the Friday before. So before the semifinal games, which I believe start at like 5 or 6, we're going to meet up at a venue somewhat close to Planet Hollywood. Details to come on that. If you are interested in coming, we are going to... What are we going
to
do?
I think
you
have to email us.
Yeah, email us.
Or you can DM us on Twitter.
Because I think what we're trying to do is set up like, I don't know, like 25 to 30 people reservation. Because like when we did this 2 years ago, we're a football show. Like 10 people showed up. So... if you're interested, email us at pac12podcast@gmail.com. We will share some sort of form for you to fill out. But yeah, if you want to come, if you want to eulogize our dearly beloved Pac-12 with us and the No Truck Stops pod, please indicate your interest via email.
Yeah, they got a reservation. There's limited space, so it'll be once we fill up, we fill up. This is a little different. They're more organized than what we would be. We're just saying, hey, show up here, and maybe it could have been 50 people. It could have been two. We don't know. But they're a little more organized, so that's good. So, but yeah, we'd like to meet up with everybody over there. It'll be before the semifinal games, so it'll be Friday. Hopefully you guys will be there. It'd be fun to get drunk and have some fun.
Get drunk because USC sucks.
Yeah, they're terrible.
Mad ass at basketball.
They beat Utah this week.
However, right? There is a decent chance that UCLA will have to play Friday night.
Wait, USC beat Utah and UCLA lost to Utah, right? Like that.
Correct.
Happened.
UCLA lost twice to Utah. They lost by 46 the first time they played.
Oh, geez.
And then this last time they played, they were probably going to win, but then their star freshman guard, Sebastian Mack, decided that he was going to try to collapse the trachea of Utah's center, Brandon Carlson. He threw an elbow. So he was running through a screen at half court, and he takes his elbow and does this, where he's like almost jumping to try to get it as high up on this guy.
That's incidental.
Carlson's like one of these big galoots. He's like 6'10 or something. And so he tries to throw the elbow. And he's like 6'3". So, like, if you want to throw an elbow and you're 6'3 at a 6'10 guy, there's a much, much better place to hit him. it's a lot easier to hit. And also, your likelihood of killing the person that you're swinging your elbow at is much, much lower. Much, much lower. More nut shots is what I'm saying.
Yeah, you've already brought that
like
up.
Like, Utah's used to it. They play BYU every year.
Yes.
If you hit them in the balls, you know, it's fair game. Lots of sports, you hit people in the balls. Water polo, famously. All that's going on underneath the water
is terrible.
Is punching, kicking, grabbing, twisting,
scratching.
Nuts. Constantly. Just nuts. There is so much nut violence in water polo. It's fine. If you hit a Utah player in the nuts, it's almost like, you know, it's like coming home. You know, oh, we're playing BYU again? No, it's UCLA. But if you hit him in the throat, they might die on the floor.
You don't want that.
You don't want to kill somebody. So general rule of thumb, if you want to do violence to a player in a game, hit them in the balls.
Gotcha. But yeah, should be some fun in Vegas. Just to give people right now, what's the odd? Like, so the only teams that are any good really in the Pac-12, Arizona is good, and Washington State's pretty good. Is
all right,
that
so,
where we are?
Arizona is like objectively good. Everyone else, you gotta like, you gotta make some allowances for. Washington State's gotten really hot in the last like. Month and a half.
Okay.
They're probably going to make the NCAA tournament. Everyone else is in varying stages of, yeah, maybe. Colorado probably has the next best chance, but they have, I think they might still have not won a game on the road this year.
No, they just,
they just
beat USC in double overtime.
I wasn't even meaning that. That wasn't even intentional.
Yeah.
UCLA was playing really well up until they tried to kill the Utah guy. They didn't actually try to kill him. It was a high elbow, and I'm being facetious. They were playing pretty well until then, but they probably needed to like more or less win out to make the NCAA tournament as an at-large. Now anybody could make it win in the Pac-12 tournament.
Gotcha.
So that's where the fun is involved. And I will say, your stupid Trojans have been playing a little bit better since Isaiah Collier came back.
They got some guys back, I think. Yeah, we'll see. But they lost in double overtime in a game they probably should have won. But yeah, so this kind of sucks for Oregon State and Washington State, right? Because they're going to get all of the NCAA units going forward because it's like,
yeah, this is the year to get the units.
Yeah, there's like no units coming unless Arizona like wins the title. But
they need they need somebody outside of Arizona and Washington State to win the Pac-12 tournament.
And then there'd be like three teams.
Then you'll have three teams, but Arizona is probably going to be prohibitive favorite in that tourney.
Yeah,
and they usually show really well.
They do show up for that, like it's Arizona fans like everywhere.
Yeah, it's Tucson North.
It's pretty funny. Yeah, so we got some Arizona. So all you Shear fans, and if you were Arizona fans, hopefully you can come to the meetup there. Because we know there's a lot of you out there. All right. Well, I guess that's going to wrap things up. Fun stuff. Yeah, let us know. Send us an email, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com, or DM us at Pac-12 Podcast on the Twitters. If you are interested in coming to the meetup, it'll be Friday afternoon, March 15th. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye. Do nut violence.